Steve has already mentioned, we've got Tracy Ingram, who is founder and CEO of Intention Technology here in Sarasota, with us here in the studio. And recently, Intention was nominated to compete for the $10 million Qualcomm X Prize to be the first to build a working tricorder. Now, of course, we all remember the tricorder for all Star Trek fans was the thing. You know, Dr. Bones McCoy would, like, sweep over an alien or a crewman and immediately deduce what was wrong with him. Well, Tracy, tell us about yourself and tell us a little bit about Intention and how does this lead to the tricorder?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Lou. You know, I mean, a lot of my quest in medicine started because, you know, my mom was misdiagnosed and she spent over 2 years bedridden from a misdiagnosis. And what it did is it got me to start looking, you know, what else is out there? You know, our common, you know, Western medicine has been around for about 150 years. And what else is out there that could really lead us, you know, in that path? And so what I've done is actually worked with technologies all over the world and imported technologies that have amazing diagnostic capabilities but are not necessarily sanctioned yet by the FDA. And so what I've been really looking at is going, how do we bring those technologies to the mass public? And so the idea of the tricorder is a single device that has all of the world's medicine. It doesn't just have some of the world's medicine, but really looking at, you know, people have been around for a long time, yeah. And there's always been someone keeping them alive. And so before we had our modern medicine the way it is, people were still managed to stay alive. And so what we're looking at with the tricorder is how do you create a device that has access to all the world's medicine? So what we've kind of what we're working with the technology is basically able to read the body. 80% of the communication is body language, and so what we're able to do is take all of those physiological cues and use it to diagnose symptoms and to really be able to send that information to really understand what's going on with somebody.
That's interesting. Now, you know, I saw your TED Talk, and I know you talked a little bit about this, and I never really realized this before. Maybe you could elaborate about how, you know, through our bodies, it runs electrical current all the time. You know, and that this is all about sort of measuring that electric current. Isn't that the whole field of biofeedback? I mean, isn't that kind of what that's about?
It is. It is. And, you know, I mean, to make it simple, you know, you all look, almost everyone understands what a defibrillator is. So in a situation where, you know, someone has a heart attack, you know, you take these paddles and you shock them with a whole bunch of voltage, you know, and it reboots them, kind of like rebooting a computer. But it's looking at what is the subtle energy that's going on in the body. What are the subtle communication pathways, and can they be measured? Some of this comes from Eastern medicine, where they believed in things like meridians, or, you know, even acupuncture follows some of this line.
Sure.
And so all of these lines of communication may have data on them. And so what we're really working on is being able to, you know, understand that language of the body and understand the electrical part of the body and how that information can be turned into data and how we can use that for diagnosis.
So actually seeing you know, sort of developing a device that can sort of stimulate something that you can measure and then see what the actual real-world result is and make a note of that and seeing if that can be repeated.
Right. You know? And see, what that does is it starts giving us real-time feedback.
Yeah.
And so much of testing and so much of diagnostics that we have now, or some of, you know, the tests that a doctor will give you, you know, someone has to interpret it, and you may get your results, you know, a couple days, a week, you know, and sometimes even later than that.
Yeah.
And to be able to have that real-time feedback where, you know, you go and you have an Oreo, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
And you can see what that's doing to your body. You can start seeing those changes in your metabolism. You start seeing the changes in the inside of your body in real time. And what happens is we're so disconnected from our bodies anymore. We don't have the experience of what is this really doing to me now. Everything's in the future.
Sure.
And so we're so disconnected with where we are, we don't actually get a chance to experience and to understand that. And so what we're really trying to do is give people back the awareness of their body. And so one piece of that is actually building this medical tricorder. Well, the reason that we came up with the term bioscanner, which is the project that Intention Technology is spearheading to fund and put together this tricorder, is in Star Trek lore, for those Trekkies out there in the audience, is the bioscanner was actually the piece that went into the tricorder that turned it from a scientific tricorder to a medical tricorder. It was also the piece that was in the ship so they could scan a planet to see if there was any alien life or anything like that.
That is right. Yeah, that is right. Because, I mean, the tricorder was like, it was like right. Spock had it. It was the science tricorder, and he could, like, wave it over rocks and stuff. And
absolutely. You know. But so what they've done with the Qualcomm Tricorder XPRIZE, what they've done, you know, the XPRIZE, which was famous for the initial space flight, you know, to bring a ship up into space and back down and recycle it in 2 weeks, which was, you know, a $10 million contest. You know, that the winner of that actually got bought up by Richard Branson, Virgin Galactic.
Right.
And so this one really, you know, is taking the best minds that are really out there looking at how do we solve this problem. Misdiagnosis counts for 460 deaths a day. And, you know, if we can come together, you know, between me and the other 41 teams that are left in the contest to really be able to tackle this problem of misdiagnosis, can we create a situation where that doesn't have to happen anymore? And if I can just save one life, if I can stop, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning when some single mother's out there and they have to decide whether or not they have to go to the emergency room, yeah, which they can't afford,
right,
or can stay home with their child, and to give them just a little peace of mind.
Sure.
That is worth it. And so that's really where we're at, is looking at how do we pull people together to be able to solve this problem. And a lot of where I came from was, you know, knowing that I've worked with technology that has been doing advanced diagnosis. I've been working with technology from Russia, China, Germany, all over Europe, and that I've had amazing levels of very acute, very, very detailed diagnoses within 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's trying to go, how do I make that technology more reliable? How do I make that technology more repeatable? How do I make it more accurate? And that's a thing that we have now, because 10, 20 years ago, we didn't have the digital signal processing we have today.
Sure.
We didn't have the advanced sensors. And to be able to take those advanced sensors matched with algorithms in the cloud to be able to do accurate readings on people and then to be able to fine-tune that technology, that's what we're working with.
You know, and also to make it, you know, a lot more available. And I know you mentioned that there are only like, are there only like 41 other companies, you know, in the contest? I thought, you know, one of the things that I saw, did it start out as there was like 300 companies that were originally, you know, slated to, you know, compete in this?
It did. It's a worldwide contest.
Yeah.
And there was I think 200 and some, but
yeah,
around 300
companies
that were all set out to do this. And, you know, a lot of them dropped out. You know,
yeah,
it was like, you know, because it's an impossible task of how do you diagnose anemia, how do you diagnose stroke, how do you diagnose melanoma, an ear infection, you know, and all of these very, you know, extreme symptoms and diagnosis, but also having all of the vitals from an ER, so measuring the blood pressure, the pulse, the respiratory rate, the temperature. And so what this does is it really takes all those, the time when you go to a doctor,
right,
the first 45 minutes you go in there, you're really sitting with the nurse and they're going to take your vitals.
Right.
And they're going to give you a questionnaire and they're going to go, what's wrong with you? And so, you know, and it's like, oh, well, I don't want to tell my doctor about that, and I'm not sure about this, and, you know, I've really been eating too many Oreos, but I don't want to tell them about that. But how do I go through that? Well, so what our device does is actually take that whole process and makes it digital. And it's not about what you're saying. It's about what your body's saying.
Great. You know, and also, too, I mean, just to you know, I mean, clarify for, you know, our, you know, listeners and I know you can, too, that, you know, to win this, quote-unquote, win this contest, there are, you know, a bunch of health metrics, which mm-hmm. you've already discussed, as well as being able to, this device is going to have to diagnose 15 different diseases,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean, and among those 15 different diseases, I guess, are some that you already mentioned, like
absolutely,
anemia and diabetes and, you know, I'm sure, or, you know, some sort of heart conditions.
Right. And so a lot of companies are coming at this from a lot of different directions. You know, we have some people who are doing genetics. We have some people who are doing blood testing. We're doing saliva testing. You know, there's a lot of different things that are coming at it. Where my background is understanding the body.
Okay.
And so what we're doing is taking a device, instead of building a separate test for every single one of those 15 diseases,
right,
what we're doing is building a platform that can be expanded. So in my experience in technology, in healthcare technology, is looking at scalability. And so I didn't want a device that could just diagnose the 15 things.
Right.
I'm looking at a device that can scale from the 15 to 100 to 1,000 to more, and have the same sensors that are readily available a relatively inexpensive platform that could be deployed to third world countries. In areas where they don't have the high advanced technology, they don't have the MRIs or CAT scans. But if you look at, you know, healthcare technology as a whole, while we've had some really great devices come out, you know, all in all, healthcare has not advanced. You know, they're still trying to get digital health records in there. You know, often there's so many challenges with just a wrong signature from a doctor. You know, they do faxes. I mean, they're probably the only industry that still uses the fax machine as their number one tool of communication.
Wow.
You know, there was an analogy and a story about if you go to an ER and say you're unconscious, that your used car salesman knows more about you than your doctor in the ER. Because your used car salesman, they know what you're wearing. They can see your shoes. They can run a credit report. And they have all that information about you. But if you're unconscious and you end up in the ER, the doctor knows nothing about you. And it's sad in a world like this that we have so much advanced technology that we can't give that to the people who need the help. And really, you know, I kind of find it as, you know, it's just a moral imperative to be able to go, if I have the technology that can help solve some of these problems, how can I not do it? And the XPRIZE, the Qualcomm Tricorder XPRIZE, gives us a great opportunity because the FDA is on board. It's qualified for the FDA Fast Track, and in fact, the FDA has actually joined in to say they've opened up a special help desk just for the teams in the contest.
That's great. That actually is an uncharacteristically, compassionate and smooth thing for government to do. Speaking of the tricorder, I mean, I know there are some like physical limitations in this contest that it's got to be 5 pounds or less.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any you talk about gathering data from the body? How would that be done? I mean, obviously. Maybe not so obviously. Wouldn't be as slick as Dr. McCoy's tricorder, where you just like kind of wave it over the body and a bunch of lights kind of blink and go beep beep beep, and he looks down at it and he goes, oh yeah, obviously you're very messed up.
Right. But we're taking two approaches with that. One is we're actually looking at a long term wearable type device that you could wear. But the initial part is a headset because it's actually measuring heart rate, skin, and brain waves.
Okay.
And what we're able to do from that, and that then connects into a cell phone, and so a cell phone or an iPad. And so what we can do then is actually measure a lot of the vitals from the body, send that information to the phone, and then actually being able to do a diagnosis from that.
And through the headset, because you do have a pulse in your head, and it would get like the brain waves, and you would be able to measure. I mean, I would assume you'd be able to measure blood pressure that way also.
Absolutely. Blood pressure, skin conductance, all the electrical components that we talked about.
Okay.
I mean, all of those things are, you know, a lot of it's right there in the head.
No? Okay.
Just to remind people again, you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, your true community radio station. Tracy Ingram is with us, and we're talking about he's going to make a tricorder with his new technologies, Intention Technologies company. Lou?
Okay. Is there any kind of timeline, for this device? I mean, with you guys or with Qualcomm? I mean, do you guys have sort of unlimited time or?
No, it's actually we're coming towards the end of the contest. Actually, it's been going for a couple of years now. We got in a little bit later than some of the other teams. What spurred a lot of that on was bringing my TED talk, which actually brought a lot of people together to work on this project.
Great. Yeah.
But the next deadline is actually coming up in March. We're going to go down from 41 teams to 10. And then from there, it goes into the hands of consumers, where consumers are actually going to get a chance to actually use the device and diagnose themselves. And that's really what the goal of this contest is to be able to create a device that consumers can do self-diagnosis.
So you actually must have a prototype by now.
Yes, we do. We do. Okay. We have a prototype and stuff. I didn't get a chance to bring it into the studio with us, but we got some really cool stuff going on.
I'd really like to have seen that. That would have been great. I wouldn't want to wear it because I don't want to know what's wrong with me. I don't have Obamacare yet, so I can't get it fixed.
Just a couple of comments, just the things I'm thinking about as I'm listening to you guys talking about this, which is fascinating. We did report that dogs can smell cancer, so that's interesting. And I imagine, you've seen a few of these articles, and you kind of look at that. This kind of reminds me of some evoked potential devices that we use in medicine. In electroengineering, we have the idea of the impulse response. So let me just quickly explain that. If you take a system and shock it, it responds. Like if you take a bell and you hit it. If you hit a bell, supposedly, at least theoretically, you can tell everything about the bell, what's constructed of the material, where the crack is, how big it is, how heavy
sure,
it is. It's called the impulse response.
Direct level resonance.
Right?
Yeah.
And I guess we could sort of talk about this afterwards as well, and that is the idea of, okay, now you have a spectrum of different types of energies, you know, from low energies all the way to gamma rays and X-rays, et cetera, visible light, et cetera, and how you... The energy that you put into the system depends on what you get out, too, and that response. Some other things that I've been involved with in the past is Kirlian photography, which is high-voltage corona photography, where you take a object you're trying to image, and you put it in a high-voltage field of thousands of volts, and you see the aura or the corona, the field, is visible then to the visible eye of what surrounds that. And that was, for example, if you take a leaf
right.
and you cut a leaf and then you take the corona, you can see where the leaf was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that, of course, was adopted by paranormal psychologists and, you know,
sure.
the pseudosciences associated with that. And actually that was also looked into to see if they could figure out if integrated chips were being manufactured correctly on the assembly line, because silicon pretty close to carbon there. All right, so just a couple of comments I just wanted to share with you about my personal experience with sort of the tricorder.
Well, and especially the comment you made about the dogs, you know, the sniffing cancer. I always thought that was interesting because, you know, they're able to understand something that's going on with you without ever touching you. And it's like, you know, so when you start looking at, is there a system in the body that actually, like a check engine light, that says there's something wrong?
Yeah.
But maybe we don't pay attention. Maybe the aches and pains that we experience and the other things that are going on are our body's warning system to try to tell us what's going on, and we just don't listen. And so what we're doing is trying to bring people back to listening to exactly what's going on with them so that they can pick it up. And, you know, but I think that's fascinating. I mean, that was just actually on the nightly news about the dogs, you know,
right.
not only cancer, but other diseases.
Right.
Noticing when some people had diabetes and those things. And I think that's something that we all actually have, is that ability. It's just maybe it's latent and we don't actually necessarily listen to it.
Well, you know, I mean, to put things in the context of history and to sort of use, you know, sort of the Star Trek metaphor, Dr. McCoy would often derisively refer to the barbaric days when they actually had to open people up to look and see what was wrong with them, you know, and they didn't have tricorders, just like we look back at like, say, surgery that was done during, say, the Civil War and consider how barbaric it was to do surgery without anesthetic. You know, I mean, we are maybe perhaps coming to an age where, you know, as you accurately pointed out, diagnosis by physicians is probably, you know, their weakest suit. You know, I mean, I have some great friends who are doctors, not only Steve, but other friends, and I admire them, and they're dedicated, and they're smart, and they work as hard as they can. But, you know, I have to say, you know, diagnosing problems, at least not so much in my situation because, knock on wood, I'm pretty healthy, but I mean, I went through both my dad and my mom helping them, is a real challenge sometimes, you know, whereas like the mechanical stuff, you know, like the orthopedic stuff, you know, fixing a knee, you know, that's they're pretty good at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking with a family doctor just the other day, and he had a very interesting story to share with me because he says, you know, when someone comes into his office with strep throat, you know, or right. sore throat or something like that, it's pretty easy to go, okay, yeah, there's a sore throat, you know, antibiotics, no problem. And he says 9 times out of 10, that's exactly what's going on. I don't really need to spend any more time with them. They can just go on. It's that 1 time out of 10 that it's not strep throat, that they overlook it because it's so common. It's those 200 people that came into that office and it's like, oh, strep throat, strep throat, strep throat. It's that one time they go, it's strep throat, but it's not. And to really get something that's an early warning system to be able to give doctors the tools to go, oh, there's something else going on here. This is a complicated situation. It's not just a strep throat. And those, I think, are the tools that doctors are looking for to be able to do more of a triage, to be able to do more of, you know, the moving through the emergency room to be able to help people. And that's really what we're trying to do, is really not replace doctors, but give them the tools they need to be able to do their job.